Chapter 77. There was a guileless simplicity in Sean's approach to life. In his mind, any problem, when met with direct action, disintegrated. If you became obsessed with a woman, you tumbled her. If that didn't produce the desired effect, then you married her. If you wanted a piece of land, or a horse, or a house, or a gold mine, then you paid your money and took it. If you didn't have the money, you went out and found it. If you liked a man, you drank with him, hunted with him, laughed together. If you disliked him, you either punched him in the head or subjected him to a ponderous sarcasm and mockery. Either way, you left him in no doubt of your feelings. When a son got out of hand, you wailed the tripe out of him, then gave him an expensive present to demonstrate your affection. Now Sean admitted he had been tardy in the matter of Dirk. But Ruth had done a most effective job. It only remained for him to call Dirk into the study and shout at him a little. A week later, he returned from a trip to Pietermaritzburg and, with an embarrassed scowl, presented to Dirk his peace offerings. The first was a brass-bound leather case, which contained a handmade shotgun by Greener of London. Tooled silver inlay, glossy walnut stock and butt, and interchangeable Damascus barrels. The other was a 2-year-old filly from the Huguenot stud at Worcester in the Cape. By Sun Lord out of Harvest Dance, Sun Dancer was an animal of the most distinguished blood in Africa and of surpassing beauty and speed. Sean paid 1,000 guineas for her and considered he'd got the best of the bargain. As far as he was concerned, there was no longer any problem with Dirk, and Sean could devote all his energy to furthering the 3 major ventures in which he was engaged. Firstly, there was the matter of putting Ruth with child. Here he had her wholehearted cooperation. But their efforts, apart from providing a deal of healthy exercise and pleasure, were singularly unproductive. Sean remembered the deadly skill he had shown in their first encounter, and was puzzled. Ruth suggested they keep in training until the rainy season began. She had developed a superstitious belief in the power of thunder. On one of his trips to Pietermaritzburg, Sean saw a carved wooden statue of Thor in a junk dealer's window. He bought it for her, and from then on, the god stood on their bedside table, clutching his hammer and overlooking their strivings with such a knowing expression that at last Ruth turned him face to the wall. Then there was Michael's tannin extract plant. He had resorted to a piece of underhand villainy that shocked Sean, and, he professed, killed his belief in the essential decency of mankind. Michael had visited each of the new growers along the valley, men who had followed Sean's lead in the planting of wattle, and after swearing them to secrecy, had offered them shares in the company. They were enthusiastic, and with Michael at the head, they visited Lioncop in formal deputation. The meeting was conducted with so much verbal thunder and lightning thrown about that the great god Thor might have been in the chair. At the end, Sean, who had teased the idea all the months since Michael had approached him, and who was now as enthusiastic as any of them, allowed himself to be persuaded. He spoke for 70% of the shares, and the balance was allotted to the other growers. A board of directors, with Sean as chairman, was elected, and the accountant was instructed to proceed with the registration of the Ladyburg Wattle Cooperative Limited. For the first time, Sean exercised his majority vote to crush the misgivings of the other shareholders and appoint Michael Courtney as plant engineer. Then, with an older director to act as a steadying influence, Michael was put aboard the next Union Castle mail ship for England, a letter of authority in his pocket, and Sean's warnings and words of wisdom in his head. Remembering himself at the age of 23, Sean decided it necessary to point out to Michael that he was being sent to London to buy machinery and increase his knowledge of it, not to populate the British Isles, nor to tour their hostelries and gaming establishments. There was swift reaction from Jackson at Natal Wattle, who regretted that the contracts between the Tugela Valley growers and his company would not be renewed, and that owing to heavy demands from elsewhere, he could no longer supply seed or saplings. But Sean's seedbeds were now well enough established to meet the needs of the whole valley, and with luck, their plant would be in production by the beginning of the next cutting season. Before Michael and his chaperone returned flushed with the success of their mission, Sean had another visitor. Jan-Polis Leroux, wary of the 3-year argument he and Sean had conducted with the aid of the postal authority, arrived at Ladyburg and expressed his intention of staying until Sean agreed to head the Natal branch of the South African Party and to contest the Ladyburg seat at the next Legislative Assembly elections. 2 weeks later, after he and Sean had hunted and killed a number of guinea fowl, pheasant and bushbuck, had consumed huge quantities of coffee and more moderate quantities of brandy, had talked each other hoarse and had closed the last gap between them, Jan-Polis left on the Johannesburg train with the parting words, "Duma, it's settled then." The South African Party's platform was a federation of the Cape, the Transvaal, the Orange Free State and Natal, under government responsible to Whitehall. It was opposed by extreme English and Dutch opinion, the Jingoes who shouted God save the King, and the Republicans who wanted the Almighty to treat the King differently. After meeting with the men on the list Jan-Polis had given him, Sean began the campaign. His first convert was Ruth Courtney, won over by the prospect of the excitement associated with an election battle rather than by Sean's oratory. Now a week or more of every month was spent in travelling about Natal to attend political gatherings. Ruth rehearsed Sean in his speech. He had only one, until he was word perfect. She kissed the babies and played hostess to the wives, tasks in which Sean showed no special aptitude. She sat beside him on the platform and restrained him from going down into the audience to engage in hand-to-hand combat with hecklers. The way she smiled and the way she walked certainly lost no votes for the South African Party. From London, Lord Casterbrook promised his support, and it looked as though Sean could count on 22 seats out of the Assembly's 30. On the level ground below the escarpment, hard by the Baboonstroom, the plant of the Ladyburg Wattle Cooperative took shape. It covered 10 acres of ground, and beyond it the cottages of the employees were laid out in neat blocks. Despite Michael's vehement protests, Sean bowed to the will of his fellow directors, and a consulting engineer was employed until such time as the plant was in production. Without him they would have lost a year's harvest of bark, for although Michael was eager and tireless, yet he was a young man with no practical experience. Even with the older man to help him, the plant was still a long way from ready before the season's cutting began. When at last the tall, silver smokestack began spewing smoke, and the furnaces lit the night with a satanic glow, there were thousands of tons of bark piled up in the open-sided warehouses around the factory. It was a wonderful season. Good rains had filled the bark with rich sap, and when the year ended, the cooperative had shown a profit of £10,000 on its first year's operation. Lion Cop Estates, a profit 4 times greater. Sean had been in and out of debt as swiftly as a small boy visits the bathroom when sent to wash his face. Despite the good rains, there were only 3 spectacular storms that summer. On each occasion, Sean was away from Lion Cop on business. While the lightning leapt across the hills and the hammer strokes of thunder broke over the valley, Ruth stood at the window of their bedroom and lamented another wasted opportunity. Bijani did much better. All his seed brought forth fruit, and he reaped 4 fat sons that season.